Hello, everyone. This is episode 57 of the Dante Elefante podcast. Welcome to episode 57. This week is Matthew Logan Vasquez. You may know him from the band Delta Spirit. I'm very excited. I've actually been a fan of Matthew for a while now. And, you know, he's one of those bands, like all these other bands, that like release music in 2020. And it kind of seemed like, what's the deal? What happened to that? But Delta, there is a new Delta Spirit record that you guys should listen to, and it's very good. I listened to it while I was prepping for this interview, and yeah, it's super good. And so we talk about that. What else did we talk about in this episode? We talk about the vaccine. We talk about playing live. We talk about their records in the past, growing up in California, and now he's living in Texas, playing with Cold War kids, going on tour with Dr. Dog. I was a massive Dr. Dog fan in the early 2010s. This is a big coming of age podcast, this episode, man. Like Dr. Dog, Delta Spirit, Cold War kids was like my life fresh out of high school. I think you could throw like Phoenix and stuff in there, and the Strokes too. But like, really, those bands were very big for me getting into indie and understanding that Pitchfork hates all my favorite bands. That was like the lesson I learned immediately, because Pitchfork never gave them love. Pitchfork never gave, you know, Dr. Dog love. And I learned very quickly that they don't give a fuck, and also that their opinion does not matter. Who cares what they think? So that's why I learned, that's why I learned very easily and very, that's why I learned very early from listening to Delta Spirit and talking to Matthew Logan Vasquez. We talk about Santa Barbara, we talk about a bunch of different stuff, but you know what? He has a new album with Delta Spirit that's out now, and it's very good. Go check it out. And yeah, I just want to, you know, you've noticed sometimes some weeks I do an intro. I want to get better at this. I want to get better at doing an intro every week, but I am leaving this Tuesday. So by the time I post all this and I post a clip, everything will be done ahead of time. Jenny and I are going on a quick 2 to 3 day vacation just because we need it. I'm starting to lose my mind at home. And, you know, we both have gotten our first shots of the vaccine, and we're just going to get away to undisclosed location. Just get away for a few days next week. And yeah, so if you're listening to this now, I am driving to that location, and I think it will be a good time. I think I will have fun. Yeah, hopefully this fucking stimulus money comes through, man. As I'm on Twitter right here, and Bank of America has not given me my stimulus, and I hope you've gotten your stimulus. If you haven't yet, hopefully you have. It's been a crazy month. I see a light at the end of the tunnel, and it's not just the fucking ring light I put on top of my computer. I see the light at the end of the tunnel. We're on our way out, people. Live shows are going to come back. The wheels are in motion. There are things happening with Dante Elefante behind the curtain that I cannot talk about nor reveal yet, but things are happening. Yeah, I'm very excited, and I can't wait to talk about some of these things that are happening. It's just the beginning. It's just the beginning. We'll see. But other than that, I'm doing pretty good. Let's just keep this intro nice and short, because I don't know what to talk about, but I do love this conversation. Oh, the main reason why I'm even doing this week, I had an issue with my Zoom H6, my external recorder. So, this audio, I went 50 minutes of doing this podcast talking to Matthew, where I didn't realize when I clicked, I don't know, it wasn't feeling the H6, the Zoom H6 wasn't feeling the SD card, so it wasn't recording. So I went the whole podcast not recording the nice audio from the nice mic. It's like literally the computer voice. It's a little bit better because I was talking through an SM58 here, nothing too crazy, but it was, I'm doing the podcast with two mics now because I don't know. It's a whole thing. Yeah, with the SM58, it sounds pretty good. So it doesn't sound awful this episode, but I am very pissed. And you will see around 53 minutes in. Well, I guess a little longer now because I'm doing this intro. But like around the hour mark, you'll see that I figured it out. So there's like 15 minutes of like actual, of actual nice sounding audio. But you know what? It's fine. I just wanted to let you guys know. Patreon. I'm still doing a Patreon. I don't know how much longer I'm going to do it, but shout out to Andrew E. Roth and Ashley Brinkley. You guys are awesome for supporting me the whole year. But I think as this pandemic slows down, I will also slow down with Patreon because I'm just, it's kind of bullshit. I don't know. It's fun. Thank you guys so much for supporting. But maybe I'll keep it around for the podcast, but like, everything else, I don't have time now. I think things are just picking up so fast, and I'm just, I don't know. I dropped a new shirt. I dropped the shirts. Go to hellomerch.com. Find Dante Elefante. I'll put the link in the description. We're doing shirts, and we just dropped a brand new hoodie. The hoodie is out. So if you like hoodies, a nice zip-up hoodie, go small, medium, large, extra large, and I'm working on the 2XL. That should be coming soon. I don't know when. So if you are interested, a brand new hoodie, a brand new black Never Trust a Junkie hoodie with my dog Logan as the logo. And it says Never Trust a Junkie. I'll superimpose the photo onto the image on YouTube. But for the audio, it's a black zip-up hoodie. And it says Never Trust a Junkie. And it's a drawing of my dog. I think zip-up hoodies are on their way back. I think some people are, I don't know. Maybe I'm putting thoughts into people's heads, but I like the zip-up hoodie. I think it's cool. I think it's kind of like Y2K, mid-2000s, Hot Topic, band hoodie. Like, I don't know. I think it's cool. I think it's going to make its way back around. I know sweaters are really in, but, you know, as we get away from the winter, what is it now? It's March. Things are going to start heating up a bit in this next month. Perfect time. Springtime. Perfect time for the zip-up hoodie. We're bringing it back. I might be early on that, but we're definitely bringing it back. Okay, then. Let's wrap it up. Thank you guys so much. Mid-Century Modern Romance is out. Link in the bio. And, that's it. That's freaking it. Stimulus checks. I'm going on a quick vacation. I'll be back next week. I'll be back within the week. I'm not even going to be gone for that long. New hoodie, new shirts. Working on a new shirt right now, too. But that's coming up soon. And then, shout out to Matthew Logan Vasquez for talking to me. Next week is Trevor Bell Jimenez. That's a great episode, too. I'm super far ahead right now. I'm very backlogged. I have all the episodes going, and I have like 4 interviews next week, next Monday and Friday. So I'm moving into April. Isn't that crazy? I'm already in April with these podcasts, and soon I'll be doing them face to face again. Very soon, actually. Very soon. And that will be beautiful. That'd be nice. Okay, Matthew and Logan Vasquez of Delta Spirit, episode 57. Let's go.
Yeah, dude.
Dude, hey, nice to see you. Yeah, there you go. Matthew Logan Vasquez, man, we're recording. Thanks for being on the pod. Where are you? Let's just start off there.
I'm in beautiful Wimberley, Texas, in central Texas, outside of Austin.
Oh, how far outside of Austin?
A little less than an hour. It's in the hill country. At my home.
Have you been there the whole the whole quarantine? Have you been there?
We moved back from Oslo, Norway. We were living there for about a year and a half. My wife's Norwegian.
Oh.
So we did that, and it was fine. And great culture, cool stuff. Very expensive. And then we moved back home to our little house. We bought this house in 2016. Love it. Just, we live right by we have river access, so we can go fishing and swimming. And there's giant cypress trees with big rope swings. And
awesome.
It's tight-knit neighbors, you know, all the thing.
When you say when you say expensive, is it comparable to California and New York, or even more so?
Oh, it's way cheaper.
Oh, okay.
Oh, Oslo? Oslo's
Oslo, yeah.
Oslo is comparable to San Francisco.
Oh, shit.
Like the median income is super high.
Yeah.
And everybody drives a Tesla or a Mercedes. Whoa. Or a BMW.
Crazy.
And then, it's super expensive. So we had like a tiny apartment there.
Right.
It was cool.
Yeah.
The culture there is really awesome. The Mexican food is surprisingly good for Europe. There are two Mexican restaurants. Like, so they even flew like cactus, like prickly pear cactus to make tacos, cactus tacos. And then they did, they made like sopes and enchiladas, like totally like would, like the sope would hold up in Bakersfield or Fresno.
Totally.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
And, but it could, you know, and all of the chilies and flavor was imported. So it was good.
That's awesome.
But it was like a $30, it was like 30 bucks for like a tiny little tapas plate of like enchiladas.
That sounds very much.
Like, I miss home.
Yeah. That and sounds very much like
and you're in the snow and you're cold and you're like, oh, take my money.
Totally.
That's basically what living in Oslo's like. It's that like the food is insanely good.
That sounds very much like San Francisco. Every time I played in San Francisco, it's like, let's go get food. Oh, the chapel, they have food. And then you go to their bar and it's like, holy shit, this is a lot of money for a small taco.
Yeah, yeah. And it's good.
Yeah, it's fine.
It's not the best taco. You're paying, it's like you're eating something that tastes super authentic and it's really awesome. And it's like convenient because if you live in the city, it's like, oh, this is like this authentic taco. But I feel like if you lived anywhere else in California, you could go find that, or in Arizona or New Mexico or in Texas, where it's just like, you know, anywhere brown people live, you get the good food.
I love it, man.
Yeah, that was something I missed in Oslo, with like seeing somebody with their with a last name with a Z. Yeah,
That's how I feel on tour sometimes.
Los Lobos.
Yeah, Los Lobos. Dude, yeah.
Los Lobos played Oslo. Los Lobos played Oslo, and I went and hung out with Steve Berlin, and they played Mossy Moss, and I just started crying.
Yeah,
like Flaco Jimenez. Like I just started just being like, like. And then we literally, it's so funny. We went to a Mexican restaurant afterward and we were drinking tequila and eating chilies.
There you go.
That was what we did.
That was great. Like, that must have been that must have been the sign. Like, I think it's time to come home. It's time to come back to the
South. Yeah. I got real sad. I got real sad. It was cold. My jeans don't like it, man. So
yeah. So you're Mexican, right?
Yeah, but I'm like a fucking crazy mix of shit. So
right. Because I was gonna say,
my mom
like,
is blonde, Scotch Irish, Michigander, and my dad is Vasquez. My grandpa's Miguel, or no, Manuel. Sorry, Miguel. Nice. Somebody else.
Because I will say this, like, being a fan of you and a fan of your band, like growing up, when your first album came out, I was 19 and then, you know, 20 in that area. And, you know, for me, there's just not a lot of Latin representation in indie rock. And so I always looked at you, I was like, oh, that's someone right there. But now there's obviously more bands and, you know, the way social media is now, there's tons of great bands now. But for you, you were the one guy. I was like, oh, he's Vasquez.
Yeah.
He's
in the band. But I'm like Latinx, like like Selena.
Right.
So like
right.
I don't speak Spanish.
Oh, me neither. I'm terrible.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I know the smell of like Anaheim chilies and like I know that that smell that burns your throat from your abuela. Like that kind of experience is like part of my life, and it hurts, you know, having the generation that calls you mijo pass away, because now I'm married the most white person. My son is named Thor.
Yeah,
Thor Ulysses Vasquez. So it's not like I'm holding it up for La Raza.
No,
over
right
here.
Right,
but
totally,
but I really, but that is like, that is home. So
right. And for someone like me growing up, like you were it. And I'm not saying you have to take on all that responsibility. But like,
oh yeah.
But like, that's awesome. I think it's great. Where are you originally from? Cause there seems like there's a lot of different,
I was
like,
born in California.
Okay. San Diego, or why do I picture you with Long Beach? Are you a Long Beach guy or no?
Well, kind of.
Right.
Long Beach is definitely my spiritual home of Southern California, or California in general. That was the place I felt the most at ease, just because it was so mixed up. I was born in Mission Viejo, California, My grandparents have been there since 69. Just have a lot of family there. Dana Point, it was like where my grandparents settled after my grandpa retired from the Navy. And it was like all orange groves and stuff back then. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And my mom's from Michigan. My parents met in Michigan. We lived there until I was five. And then we moved to Austin as a kid in the 90s. And I got into all sorts of trouble out here. Austin, Texas in the 90s was like the movie Dazed and Confused. Like very much so. Right. And still is like that element. That element's still here, which I love, which is just kind of this weird rock and roll hippie crazy mix of stuff that all feels right. Like the spirit of like, you know, the spirit of what you imagine the 60s to be exists here somehow. And not like completely, it's not like a Shangri-La or anything, but that feeling did. And as a kid growing up, I was able to kind of like have a suburban life, but then there was always this city that was really close, being Austin, and going and seeing live music and being exposed to that at the perfect age of like picking up a guitar and like discovering Nirvana and going to punk shows, and that being a like the city's culture is always like so engulfed in live music and kind of like, and like really crazy live music. So like my first show was Reverend Horton Heat and the old 97s and like at the Austin City Music Hall. And it was fucking crazy. And there's all these like skinheads stomping around and like moshing. And I was like, this is crazy. thought it was just I was scared shitless, but I was also like, this punk thing is the dopest shit and I love it. And then I moved to California and everybody liked ska punk. And I was like, I don't understand.
Right.
But I learned how to skank like every good, you know, every good kid did.
Yeah.
You know?
That was the time.
Yeah. It was the time.
Yeah.
Pick it up. My cousin was in a band called Skanking Youth.
Oh, cool.
It was pretty sweet. He played bass, which must have been really fun, but yeah. I definitely experienced culture shock moving back to California then and had to learn a lot of things. And I like grew a thicker skin. Cause like there are differences where people like, there's so many people in Southern California and you can hang out and people are in general super nice up front where they go like, hey, how you doing? Blah, blah, blah. Exchanging niceties is really easy. And then you're like, I think I hit it off with that person. And they're like, oh yeah, let's make a plan and hang out. And then they don't hang out. And then you get super offended and you're like, why are you acting so messed up towards me? And you get really upset and sad. And then you're like, oh, they don't like you. And then you learn like later, you grow this thicker skin. It's like, oh, people just like flake out. It's like, oh, I'd love to hang out, but not right now.
Right.
So I'm not going to answer the phone. And you learn like these other cues. It's like a read under the lines. I forget the French translation, but it's like a French idea. And that's Southern California. People genuinely like you and want to hang out with you. They just don't tell you that. They tell you that, but when you go to actually do the thing, then they don't do it until you start like feeling comfortable in your skin, and then people want to hang out with you. And once I learned that, I began to make more friends in California and really enjoyed it. Missed the beach, missed surfing and stuff, but
that's crazy because I always say I always felt the most alone when I was living in LA. Even though I had all these friends and I'd see people at shows, I was easily the most alone.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And you're like, I mean, people get like that in New York, too.
Yeah.
But I feel like LA is like way harder, I felt like. And that's why we ended up moving. I lived when I was 19, I lived at the Oakwoods where that show Love is set.
Yeah.
And it's where like child actors and divorced men go live. And I was neighbors with Scott Weiland.
There you go.
From Stone Temple Pilots.
Hell yeah.
He was my next door neighbor. Like he lived next door.
Oh, that's
and
amazing.
All he ever said to me was like, can you keep it down? And that's it. Dub Spirit, we opened for them twice and it was so fucking sweet.
And he still didn't recognize you?
Dean DeLeo was really nice. He didn't say a word to anybody. He got off the hotel or he like would take a limo from the hotel, get on stage, and then perform, right. and then get back home, disappear. Ah. It's like too cool for school. DeLeo, the guitar player, is the fucking coolest guy ever. Rules, super sweet.
Do you think that kind of jadedness just comes from touring so much and for so long that he's just like, I don't need to be at the venue. I show up, do my thing, and go.
I think that Scott Weiland is one in a million.
Okay.
Great. Front people, like great singer, songwriter, front person, whole thing. Born in the wrong era.
Right.
Or actually, you know what? Born in the perfect era for the perfect time and the perfect moment for his thing. And I was like, after seeing him, I was like, man, he's so fucking underrated. And then Kelly and Delta Spirit, he was like, actually, I think he's kind of rated, you know,
perfectly very well rated. Right.
He's totally rated. He's a goddamn legend. He started a band called Velvet Revolver. I saw their first show. So insane. When they tried to play the Hustler Building, and then they played in some like parking lot in LA. Crazy. And I watched it from that was the first time I saw Scott Weiland and Slash perform. And it was like, oh my God, that's a thing. Like that power on stage.
Were you a Guns N' Roses fan growing up?
Yeah, that was like one of the first bands that I was exposed to at all. Like, and the idea of what rock and roll is, like pirate radio.
Mm-hmm.
And pirate radio playing Welcome to the Jungle as a young kid, and just being like, just like that, the intro to that song is, it's just the most like, do you like fire?
Yeah. It was very dangerous.
Yeah, that's how you felt. Yeah,
totally. And so at that point, were you already playing guitar? Is Slash an inspiration for you, or were you already in the music?
Yeah,
going to punk shows.
I play in flats. Like I play a half step down because of Kurt Cobain,
right?
And Guns N' Roses, and Rolling Stones, and Robert Johnson, and Jimmy. You know, like all. Slash is definitely included in that framework, you know,
right,
of stuff.
That's awesome.
I mean, GNR is dope.
Did that happen in Austin, or did that happen when you moved to LA or to California?
That happened. No, that happened when I was Guns N' Roses was like, before I moved to Texas, I was like, I knew who Guns N' Roses were. Yeah. And then I had an older brother, so it was a lot easier to get exposed younger, you know. I was like in third grade when Kurt Cobain died,
right?
And I was so sad because my brother was sad,
right?
And Nirvana was everything.
Have you been to his house in Seattle?
No,
and gone to the bench?
I have been though to Ozzy Osbourne's childhood home in Birmingham.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I went there, and that was, it's still a slum.
Right.
It's so gnarly. That guy came from fucking nothing.
Nothing, yeah. Right.
And it's awesome. Like, I love Ozzy Osbourne.
Someone has been, someone on TikTok has been posting clips of the Osbourne show on MTV, but on TikTok.
Yeah.
And I forgot how fucking great that show is. That show was hilarious. And it needs to be streaming somewhere. I'm sure something will pick it up. But like, that was one of those shows I used to love. Like early 2000s MTV was pretty big. For me, at least.
Wasn't he heavily sedated through that whole thing?
It seemed like it. It totally seemed like it.
I wonder if that will be on, because like Jack Osbourne was struggling with opioid dependency right around that time too, when they were filming that whole thing.
Absolutely.
So I wonder if they put it up. But I mean, Ozzy Osbourne is like still. I saw him with Frank from Dr. Dog and I.
Right.
We're at Lollapalooza. This is a couple years ago. And Frank and I were like, let's go see Black Sabbath play. And it was like, yeah. And we were maybe a little, we had maybe smoked a little Sweet Leaf. And just walking towards him, it's just like fire. And Ozzy comes out. He's so old. And he's singing kind of flat, like out of key.
Yeah.
He's like, come on, you motherfuckers. And the crowd singing so loud. And puts him singing out of key into key. Like, really? It like the crowd singing the note in key at him, like puts him in pitch.
That's crazy.
And like the electricity, it was still so sludgy and beautiful. It's cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You and Dr. Dog get like clumped in together a lot. You guys are friends. Do you like being clumped in together?
And like, that was our first national tour was with the Core Kids, who are our friends from our local Long music Beach. Scene. And love the and love those guys. Yeah. So Long Beach, as soon as I graduated high school, love Dana Point. Awesome Sleepy Beach community,
right?
You know, you got to have a lot of money, and I don't.
Sure.
My family, like, we had five people in a two-bedroom apartment crammed together. My parents lived in the kitchen,
right?
But that's where our family was, so that's where we were, which is great because it's beautiful and great experience. But moved to a place that felt a little more comfortable for my vibe, our vibe, the band's vibe. And as soon as like we could afford to like move, we moved and rented a big house all together as a band. Two houses actually next door to each other Molino in the Belmont Heights in Long Beach. It was awesome, man.
Super cool.
Dr. Dog was our second national tour.
Okay.
And then we went on a few other tours after that and have remained close. Love them so much.
That's awesome.
They're just killer live band. Great dudes. It's not like a GGBB, like good guy by a band kind of thing. It's they kind of hold it down. Their whole thing, their whole vibe is always, you know, is always growing in its way and at its speed. And it's a guaranteed fun show.
Totally.
So
yeah, I've seen them a couple times and very crazy, very great live band. The idea of being a great live band, was that always a priority first with you and Delta Spirit versus making the record sound great? Or were you guys more of a live band or more of a studio band, I should say?
I think Dr. Dog was a big influence on this conversation as a band that I feel like History From Below is noticeably slower on record, but sounds good. But we play those songs a lot faster live and with more kind of oomph. Like Bushwick Blues, you know, for example, it's like 10 BPM faster. But it's like I think a record is like a frozen moment in time, and I don't think you're ever gonna get something more holy than a live show,
right?
Where it's like the exchange of energies and trying to get everybody on the same page, and that's always kind of been the focal point of what we do. Well, that's our best thing. It's like songwriting, like, of course, love the craft. Love it. And, you know, you're not going to have a great show without great songs that people want to sing along to and relate to in their lives when they're listening from the record to the moment. But, you know, that moment is like, it's the most addictive, beautiful thing. And, you know,
so whose idea
was why I'm still here?
Was that like a producer idea to make the song slower, or did it just progress over time?
No, it was just a natural thing where it's just like our focus. And we did correct that more because we did notice that, you know. And the other one was like the first record, Ode to Sunshine, was recorded in a cabin.
Yeah.
So that was pretty much just like we had dumpster dove Trader Joe's. The only money we spent was like on the wine. And so we just we just recorded it the best we could because that's what we did. And we kind of wanted to have the power. And still do.
Right.
Yeah.
Ode to Sunshine was the first project. And was there a lot of touring before that? Or did you guys play those songs live a bunch before you even started recording? Or what was that record?
Yeah. We knew those songs most of the songs pretty well before we started touring on the album. But it was very much like we had made an EP and did some touring with the EP, and then we made the record ourselves, put it out ourselves, and it got picked up by Rounder Records.
Yeah. They
put out Nathaniel Rateliff's solo stuff and all of that. And I think, under a different name, has put out the Night Sweat stuff too.
So with releasing it yourself, I think the DIY scene has changed so much. Like, what was that like releasing it yourself in the late 2000s?
Well, in 2000, it's similar in that like gas prices were cheaper.
Right.
But I feel like the differences were like the social media aspect was a lot, was way, way different with, first it was mp3.com and then it became MySpace. Yeah. And MySpace, you have so much more like curation. You had like a tremendous amount of like curation with MySpace that you don't get with Facebook. Like Facebook was like, nah, we're not going to give you any of that stuff. All the analytics are ours. And then also we're going to duck everything that you post unless you give us money.
Right.
Or if you give us money, it's going to be even harder for you. So it's like this, like DSM? No. And I forget the, what's the state of masochist bed? S&M. It's like an S&M relationship where they're just like, Zuckerberg's just so cruel to anything creative, because there's also like lots of trash out there that people just want to like pump out. So it's an interesting thing, I guess, that they have to deal with. But you know, it was also really funny with the top eight. It got pretty dramatic there.
Yeah, it sure did. I remember those days.
Man, I remember text messages or people that like didn't want to talk to us because like it was like, yo, man, we opened two shows. And we need to be on your top eight or else our band can't get big without being on your top eight. And they're not wrong in some ways, like where it's like, yeah, you know,
it helps.
But it's also like you have the bands that you aspire to be, that you're like your biggest, most popular fans, the ones that you aspire to be. And then you're most like that you feel that you are the most similar to. And then like one band that no one's ever heard of that you think's really good and has like one really good song. And your friends with them.
There was absolutely an art form to building the top eight.
Oh, it was such cool cult. It was such a cool microculture that's gone. Yeah.
That's how I would find bands like looking at their top eight. I did that all the time growing up.
Oh man, it was such a great discovery tool. Mm-hmm. And now Spotify's like done that, but they have taken it away from bands. They say their algorithm's picking it, like their algorithmic pick. Like, come on, dude.
I don't sound like a sick band on my similar artists. I'm like, I don't know who that band and you're is. Like,
Yeah. I mean, God bless the Serotones. I've never really like gotten down on their music.
Right.
Totally fine band. I actually did listen to it. They're great. Totally good. Yeah. But it's like, but I don't know them. And I know a bunch of bands that I like would prefer to like put there, or like my own solo project isn't even recommended connected in my fucking thing. So like if you went and searched Delta Spirit now and you're like, oh, remember Delta Spirit from 2000 or like from the Ode to Sunshine days. And I've never like kept up with that band. You would have no idea that I had done like a whole, like three albums of solo records. And also this really cool project, Glorietta. And it's just all not connected, but there is like a playlist I can make, but the top eight culture is just so good. I miss it.
I know.
I don't know how to like get these Swedes on board with this thing. The Swedes didn't live in Southern California where the top eight was so important. Maybe.
Yeah. It was king.
Top eight didn't matter to them.
I know. Do you feel like, cause you guys have done so many records now that like people dip in, they dip out, like that the audience changes
has
changed over the years?
I think the audience has mostly only grown.
Right.
And then it's just kind of like where you connect in sentimentality to like where you were when you heard that song.
Right.
You know, it's been like, it's kind of bittersweet with this record because so much effort went into making it, this last one.
Yeah.
And we've always put out a record, people go, man, I don't know. And then we go perform it on tour. And then they go, that's the best one.
Yeah.
And we don't get an opportunity to go do that. And some people go, nope, Ode to Sunshine is the best one.
Oh, yeah. That'll always happen.
Or the self-titled one with California on it.
Right.
That was it for me.
Right.
And Yamaha, there was vampires in this thing with the song in the movie. Mm-hmm. And you're like, yeah, that's great. Totally cool. But
yeah,
Yeah. So we'll get it. You know, COVID's not going to last forever.
No. And I always feel like you guys are one of those bands. Well, I don't know. This is just a weird thing to say, I guess. But like, there's a lot of bands. You have to see it to believe it. You have to see Delta Spirit to believe it.
Yeah, man. I mean, like, we're just never got, you know, Pitchfork never liked our band.
Right. They never liked a lot of bands.
It's kind of a miracle that Rolling Stone, like, even, like, reviewed our band. Right. And somehow we just continued to go, like, they're good.
Right.
Oh, that's a good band. Why didn't I think about that?
Yeah. Huh,
okay. And that's okay with me. We're you know, so long. It keeps our band on our toes.
It gets to
just basically like, hey, man, you got to mean it.
We're getting to a point where the admiration from Pitchfork and all these other places don't really matter as we're getting more direct to the audience where it's like, oh, as long as you guys keep coming to the shows, like that's how we're living. This is awesome. This is more important to me, the live shows, than the review. And the review is always such like, you know, I put out a record last month and in January. And like, you know, one of the reviews is like, it's derivative. All music is fucking derivative. Like, it's just, I don't know.
It's also
not good for me.
Oh, well, you didn't have your PR person. Like, well, here's how it really works, guys.
Yeah.
You pay a bio guy to write a bio guy. The bio guy writes the bio. The PR guy releases the press release and it's all verbatim from the review.
Yes.
That's all it does. You have told said lazy person who copy pastes the thing. It's like, insert this here. And then you use your social media to advertise the existence of this thing. But because you have paid the monkey to ride you around the yard, you get some sort of legitimacy to be able to go do stuff. You know. Totally. And now Clear Channel and Universal Music over the last like 5 years is basically just like controlling like all late night and all things. So it's just kind of like, it's really pretty unique. To see anything like make it on to a late night thing that isn't somehow attached to like Universal Music or Sony at this point.
Right.
And so it's like, what indie music? And now with COVID, this is like so doomsday sounding, but now with COVID, it's like all the venues are closing, you know, it's like Kung Fu Necktie and Philly's gone, man. Fuck. You know, it's like, there's like no shows in California. In Austin, we have social distance shows where people have to sit down with masks on, and but you can still play.
Have you played yet? Have you done anything like
that? I'm playing next Friday.
Whoa! How do you feel? Are you excited?
Well, I was able to get vaccinated,
right?
So I'm feeling pretty chill about it. Not so stressed. They have like a UVAC thing that like kills everything. Frail as shit in the air, and if you drink your drink, you can have a drink and you can like take your mask up to drink your drink, but as soon as your drink's done, somebody comes along, this is what's been explained to me, comes on and goes, okay, put your mask back on.
Oh,
it's like they have like Karens running around.
That's crazy.
Keep everybody safe. It's important, you know,
I think
because this situation, that one's like inside, which is kind of weird. And I put the kibosh in all inside shows. And I didn't know this one was until I'd already confirmed it. And so I'd been kicking it down the road and I got my mom vaccinated. And that's how I got vaccinated.
Cool.
So now, I mean, it's fine.
Right. Yeah. I think I feel like that's such a like, you know, when I hear a situation like that, I'm like, oh, that sounds like it should be in California. They're doing that. Cause all I hear from all these other podcasts I listen to is Texas is free. You could do whatever you want in Texas, but it sounds like there is some, you know, there's some rules. There are rules.
Yeah. There are some rules.
Yeah.
You know, there are definitely some rules. You know, there are places that have been kind of busted for not like kind of being a little bit more loose and stuff, you know, but it's about personal responsibility.
Right.
And that's kind of the thing where it's just like, you know, it's pretty much mandated and publicly shamed. If you're not wearing a mask in a grocery store here,
you're going to get
chirped at, like hard chirped at.
Right. Totally.
But if you're outdoors and we have nice weather here,
right.
Especially this time of year, it feels very similar to California. it's just basically like, yo, I'm outside. Take it easy.
Totally.
Some people are still pretty stringent on things, you know, maybe, but I think like we have a good flow of it.
Are you going to sit behind the plexiglass?
No.
Oh, okay. I don't think so. I talked to Ron Sexsmith and he said he had to sing behind a plexiglass. I was like, oh, I thought they just did that for drummers. I thought that was just a drummer thing.
Yeah, that would be interesting. I haven't seen anybody do that, but I'm starting to like book shows and do things. I'm trying to look into playing California. I'm doing a socially distant thing in Ventura with Dawes and local natives.
Oh, in Ventura? Oh, nice.
But I don't know how to play a show in California right now. With like the California variant, and I was just like trying to find a. I'm looking into it though. Like my friend owns a restaurant, might try to do something like that. That's outdoors.
Cool.
But I'll let you know.
Yeah, I'll be there. I'm in Santa Barbara, which is just 30 minutes away.
Santa Barbara.
You played at Velvet Jones.
Yes, many times.
Yeah. RIP, that place is gone.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It was destined to happen. There's not enough pop punk bands to keep that place open.
Nope. NoFX hasn't toured in a while. Lagwagon hasn't toured in a while.
Dude. All the Christian guys can't go see Dogwood.
Yep.
Yeah. It's messed up, bro.
It's hard. It's a hard time.
Yeah. hard times for the live music. And is there a music scene in Santa Barbara?
We have one venue.
It's
tough because
we
have
Soho. What's the venue called?
Soho. It's like the one that's upstairs.
Yep
That
one's okay.
It's fine. It's cool. It's what we have left, so it's gonna have
it exists
to,
you have a thing. Santa Barbara's always been so tough because it's like
right.
You always have thousands of people that are never coming back.
Right.
And thousands of people that are coming that have never heard of your band before.
Right.
And it's just like how I feel like the ebb and flow of playing in Santa Barbara, I've experienced that very thing where it's like, oh, we hit like a sweet spot there for a minute where it's right. Like, this is great. It's like totally awesome. And like in the early days was just like, well, you're playing on there was a house full of couches. Actually, that was San Luis Obispo. It's not so far away, but there's a house full of couches in San Luis Obispo and we played DIY shows there.
Oh, was it
for a while?
Did they have a crazy bathtub?
I don't recall a crazy bathtub, but I know that they made a platform to fit more couches. So it's basically a stadium seating of couches.
Whoa.
And we'd sleep there. It was free to sleep there.
That's awesome.
That was cool. Yeah.
So when we were talking early days, we're talking like 2007, 2008-ish, and you guys were booking these tours.
No, 2005, 2006.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
And you guys were booking these tours yourself. Did you guys do a lot of California runs? Like
we did. Yeah. We did a ton of DIY stuff. And like that was kind of, you know. That's kind of how you did it.
Right.
Growlers also is like, I remember us succeeding in doing that. And then they were right behind us doing that same thing and built the craziest shit, you know, but that DIY thing was real.
Right.
But it was like, we had a good community of people. It wasn't just like, wasn't just our band. You know, there was just like a freaking swath of bands doing the same thing that we were doing and just being able to like, we were good about trying to connect the dots with other people all over the place and kind of had, and it was like, definitely like the whole band was like really inquisitive about making friends in other places. So, it was,
that's always my advice.
If you didn't like my personality, you might like John.
That's always my advice. When bands are trying to book a tour, I'm like, dude, you have to make friends. And you have to when they book you a show in Santa Cruz, you got to get them back. And that's how it just starts building.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Now you can play in Santa Cruz.
But when you make it all about that, it never works.
I know.
When you're like, dude, I'm doing this residency. Everything's going to change for me. Because I'm posting every day.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't. You kind of have to like mensch. You got to be a good mensch or have good menches in your band. And also first, like, I mean, that's like only, that's second only to, you know, be a great band and have really cool right. songs. And
where did you yeah. guys have that instant chemistry when you first started practicing, or is this something you guys built from playing live?
Man, I knew Kelly when I was a senior in high school, mm-hmm. and a year after, like after I graduated high school, I used to busk a lot. And there's a story on the internet, which is true, that I was busking in San Diego and met Brandon, who was at that time in an emo band called Noise Ratchet.
Right.
And they had opened up for like all sorts of crazy bands. But I remember seeing Brandon and John, who are in that band, and their stage presence. And that was like in the days of like girl pants being the only tight pants you could purchase. And like long, like John had this like flowing long blonde hair and he could just like whip it around. And Brandon just played with a lot of intensity and really just came out of the Shea Cafe punk world.
Right.
And they were always kind of in a band that like, they liked their songs enough, you know, but, it was kind of an ends to a certain degree where by the end of the Noise Ratchet experience, after like Rick Rubin executive producing their record, which just kind of means he listens to the demo,
right.
lends his opinion. Like at the end of the day, they're like, ah, they were making music that they weren't wouldn't listen to. Does that make sense?
Right.
And that was kind of the goal, where it's like, I was kind of doing the same thing. I was living in LA next to Scott Weiland, not knowing who the hell I was.
Yeah.
trying to like put my love for Jimmy Eat World and Pink Floyd together somehow, which right. doesn't work at all.
It didn't work. You didn't find it.
It didn't work. It was a failed experiment of a 20-year-old. And it was a waste of, it wasn't a waste. It was a great experience. I'm really grateful for the $90,000 at least that I spent of Universal Music's right. money. While they like, that was like in the days of sign everybody to a development deal, look busy because you're about right. to get laid off because there's this thing called Napster. So right. I was a part of that camp of people, like I'm literally a kid doing that. And then once the kind of their band fell apart at the same time as my band fell apart, and I was going to LA the same time they were going to LA. And I always told myself, man, I really want to be a band. Like when I was doing the whole thing, I was really sad. And I was like, man, I really just wish Brandon and John would be in my band.
Yeah.
And Kelly and I like worked together and did stuff. And he started another band and like ended up playing drums with another guy and got on like Jimmy Kimmel.
Mm.
And like, I was like, well, that's cool. But kind of left me in a lurch where I was like my songwriting buddy, the dude that I've been writing songs with since, you know, age zero,
yeah.
Like was gone. And then we started the band, Brandon, John and I, with this other guy, Sean Walker. And we started record. I was like, I know just a place we could record for free. And that was Kelly's parents' house. And so we were going to Kelly's parents' house or Kelly's house. And we were recording there and he was helping us set everything up. And he's like, man, I wish I could just be in this band. I was like, you can be in this band right now. and that's how Kelly joined the band. And that's why he's not in he played on the first EP, but he wasn't in the first EP. And that's kind of like the early, early story of like our buddies kind of getting together and doing stuff. So,
okay. So you guys are all pretty close and it was really easy.
Yeah. And still close. Like it's insane. Like, we have two New Yorkers. One lives in Montreal and then the other is Angelino.
Right.
So,
and then when it comes to practicing now, you guys all just fly out and get ready for a tour.
Yeah. So like, you know, already working on the next Delta Spirit record. And, cause we need to put out a record if we're going to continue to tour.
Right.
Cause it's kind of a mulligan record. So Brandon flew out to Texas and was over at my buddy Israel Nash's studio, and him and I, and back when the pandemic only had one variant,
right?
And it was in the summer; it wasn't so bad. And so we worked on a bunch of stuff, and then I stemmed that out, like, and sent it to the other guys to work on. So that's where we're at. But
Were there any thoughts about pushing this record out of 2020 into 2021?
Yeah, totally.
But the wheels were in motion. You couldn't do it, or you didn't want to do it, or.
I mean, the idea got thrown out.
Yeah. And what difference would it have made? Like,
and then they're like, here's the release date. And it's like, okay.
Yeah. And then you just kind of gonna go with it. That's wild.
Really good.
You know, I think it's really good. I listened to it last night, and I hope I've been saying this a lot on this podcast, but like, I hope that the history books look back on the bands that released shit and that stayed busy, because not easy. It's not easy when you have all this planned and you're getting excited and then the whole world stops and then,
yeah, dude,
you know, but you guys still did it. You released a great record.
A lot of plans, man.
Right. Totally.
it's like booked and but that's what happened. And you know what happened instead was like, I taught my kid how to ride a bike and swim.
Right.
And I also wrote a shit ton of songs and
that's good.
Learned some more about synthesis right. And, learned how to cook a little better.
Right.
Take a global pandemic.
From a lot of people is that they're having difficulty writing. Sounds like you're writing a lot, but like, what is there to write about? Are you drawing from past experiences or your new experiences being a dad? Like, where are we at? Cause I don't know what to write about. I've been inside my fucking house all year.
Well, the first thing I wouldn't write about is COVID.
Right.
Because John Bon Jovi already wrote about it.
And Eric Clapton.
And about Black Lives Matter. Since Jovi's New Jersey's favorite son came out and saved the day.
Right.
I think we're might as well put a nail in that coffin.
Yeah, so, totally. Van Morrison and Clapton, too, had some strong words.
Woo! Tell it. Clapton should have. Yeah, okay, never mind. No.
I've never
opinion
been
on UK immigration circa 1970s is pretty insane.
Yeah, take a look into that, listeners, if you haven't already, man. Like,
apology is really good for that, though.
What do you say?
Because it's like, oh, he's just like, I was out of my mind on drugs.
Oh, okay, good.
My best friend is black.
Oh, my God.
My best friend is Buddy Guy. He is my best friend. Yeah. I love him so much. I don't know what the fuck I was thinking.
Well, and, there you go.
And so, you know, people can change. People change. I change.
I've never been a fan of Eric Clapton. And that just was never one of my guitar guys. I just never got into it.
Yeah. I feel like he really invented like the soulless.
Right.
It's like 12 bar blues. It's so good. It's so good. Yeah. Walmart blues. Ooh, I like that. Yeah. I was going to say Guitar Center blues, but that's Mike Campbell.
Yeah, totally.
Mike Campbell and Kurt and James.
Totally.
But like licks, every Petty lick or every Mike Campbell guitar lick is so easy, but it's how he plays it that makes it in and when in the song that it is, it's just fucking perfect. It's so good.
Right.
Heartbreakers.
Yeah, I love that, man.
Segue away from the racism of Eric Clapton.
Well,
former racism.
Denounced racism. Yeah,
but
yeah,
songwriting. Back to the point. Songwriting is basically like, yo, you know, get in love with the craft and make it a game to break through stuff. You know, I haven't written a lyric in a minute, but but I did look back and went, oh yeah, I wrote like 20 songs this year.
Yeah,
it's pretty good.
It doesn't feel like it though when you're doing it, right?
What does it feel like?
No, it doesn't feel like that. You're like, oh, I've written here. Oh, maybe I wrote one there. And then you're looking
I didn't
like,
do anything this year.
Yeah.
And then I look back and I was like, oh, I had really productive because I've had a kid home. So I can only work 2 days out of the week.
Right.
But, you know, you just have to sit down and wrestle. You got to wrestle with God until you get it. And sometimes that doesn't make it. Sometimes you're not going to get a good song, but you're going to get a hook or an idea or a thing that gets you to the next thing to be able to succeed, you know? And it takes a lot of songs. It took a lot of like bad Jimmy Eat World, Pink Floyd combos.
Right.
To get, and then finally discover, and like a lot of like bad ideas. Right. of like just like copying Bob Dylan vernacular until
what's that?
Until you start feeling like, no, that's my voice, not his. And totally. And you know, and start being like, oh yeah, you know, maybe I don't need to use the word whiskey cousin brother sister
right
ever again.
What's that, Miles? I don't know. It gets attributed to Miles Davis, but I don't know if he actually said it. That's like a lot of those internet quotes, but like it takes a long time for you to sound like yourself. And yeah, I think it's just all about like writing songs and like also accepting that you might not write anything that day. And that's okay too. Just because you sat down and you're like, okay, I'm going to write a song. And just because something didn't come out.
Yeah.
It's not a failure of a day. It's just, you know, what happened.
Yeah. Because you're just chasing ghosts.
Yeah.
With it, and you hear a thing and it's like, well, does this make me feel something? And does that make me feel something that I can put words to? Maybe not, but right. Maybe not right now. So save it and record it. I write a lot with, I'm really happy that like this next generation of creation, like creative hardware synthesis stuff has been made. Like, so I've written at least half of records on a Novation circuit. And then I also have like the MC-101, which is the Roland Groovebox, and they all just take AA batteries.
That's awesome.
And they made a new one for the Novation one. And it's my wife bought it for me for Valentine's Day.
There you go. I bought my girlfriend flowers. Not the same. But yeah. That's crazy.
But yeah, so it's like that kind of stuff, you know. It's like continuing to like break out of
that like writer's block.
Try to find any way to get your intuition in line. Yes. And you don't do it. You don't sit down at the piano going like, "Okay, here we go. It's gonna be this is the one."
Right.
You don't know when the one
is gonna.
You
come.
Don't know. Yeah.
It usually only
comes because you've already been doing it a lot. So.
I talked to this artist named Field Medic, and he had something interesting to say. He said that he feels like he's writing the same song over and over and over again, trying to make it perfect. Do you feel that way also? Or is it like, I've already done a sound like this. It's time to move on and do a different sound. Or are you chasing this feeling?
Once I feel like I got a thing someplace else, like newness, I always need newness.
Yeah.
For me. I don't feel that at all. I'm not writing the same thing.
Okay. Cool.
I feel like I'm curating, you know, I feel like I'm curating my tastes for folks. But those tastes shift. So, you know, I'm in the midst of, I'm doing a bunch of things, but like I'm working on electronic music and I'm working on a Catholic mass setting.
Oh, talk about that.
So this is an idea. I will finish it because I love to finish things.
Right.
Sometimes more than I like even doing them. Just love to see it all done.
That's good though.
I want to do a Requiem, which is like, it's not going to come up to like, you know, or I don't presume to like come up to the standard of like a classical, because most of this stuff is like, you know, Mozart's Requiem, which is Lacrimosa, which is in the Big Lebowski, but
right,
like Lacrimosa. But I sang the Requiem in high school, in Latin, you know, and I was like, oh, Latin's kind of a cool, like it's a universal language that is dead,
right.
And I was thinking like of, I haven't written a single song about how I feel about, you know, 500,000 people in the United States being dead. So that's kind of like, well, here are the lyrics. They're pretty innocuous, mostly. And they're definitely innocuous if you don't translate it from like, translate the Latin, but here's a bunch of different like vowel sounds and consonants that all fit kind of in a Sigaros kind of way,
right?
And then you can just compose the music, and the whole sentiment of a Requiem is, you know, these departed souls
right
go to heaven, you know, and like that's, I like that. So that's kind of the idea, that but I've only gotten to the beginning. So I have a long ass way to go on that idea. But isn't that a fun idea?
It is a fun idea.
And in that, it's like a game.
It's like in a game, and the importance of just learning how to finish something is really good, too, because so many people leave projects, like, half done.
Mm-hmm. And then they never do it. I have a whole record that I mastered, and I never put out.
Why not?
Because it's too weird.
Okay.
Or it was too weird. It was done, like, right after the Delta Spirit solo record.
Right.
The whole band, and everybody convinced me not to put it out. But it is really fun. And super odd, and it kind of has like certain vibe about it, like kind of like that band Liars.
Mm-hmm.
And
do you ever see
of
it?
Electronic elements, and it's just raw creative.
Do you see stuff. It? Do you ever see it coming out or no?
I do, but I was like, it's 10 years this year.
Yeah.
But now I'm kind of like, well, it's kind of tied up right now, right. Contractually.
Oh,
so
okay.
I think it might be more fun to wait 20 years and see how that goes.
Well,
but I don't know,
especially,
man.
if people romanticize that era of your band, you know, they might be interested in,
but it sounds nothing like that.
Oh, okay.
It's literally like I'm 27 and I'm throwing like just insane paint at the canvas with like, and then there's a bunch of cool people on it. Like Bo from My Morning Jacket,
right?
Eli, who plays with Father John Misty, Rob from Deer Tick,
right.
Or at that time was in Deer Tick, now in Midland, and then a bunch of stuff. So, yeah, it's cool. Oh, Rah Rah Riots. Alexandra was on, it plays cello on it.
Love it.
And recorded in San Pedro at Core Kids rehearsal space.
Right.
So it's pretty fun.
Do you find it? It's like kind of crazy to see all these bands that maybe you guys are touring with, your contemporaries, and that you guys are still here. Where other bands I haven't heard of, or maybe they're doing other projects now. Do you take pride in that kind of thing, or is that just it? Just is what it is. The longevity.
Yeah, I'd be a liar if I don't look for every reason to, like, you know.
You're still doing
myself
it.
An old
yeah,
pat
totally.
On the back. Yeah, sure, of course. But I'm here because I love it.
Right.
You know, the reason why I did the solo thing was because I genuinely, it's not the accolade, it's the experience of playing music. And, you know, in a certain way, when the Beatles talk about like, oh, we were becoming less, or we were becoming worse musicians.
Right.
Being on tour. And it's definitely like, in Delta Spirit, when you have a guitar player like Will McLaren, who's like just devastatingly talented,
right,
at guitar, you know,
totally,
my guitar's not going to be too high in the mix,
right?
But I know how to play my instrument, damn it. And so it's been fun doing like power trios through Europe and seeing what I can bring to the table in different ways, and being curious and just kind of letting things go in those directions. So yeah, man.
Yeah. So is that kind of nice? Cause Delta Spear has such a large, big sound to be able to do that trio.
Yeah. It's like the ZZ Top vibe, you know,
right.
Like it still fills everything up. Cause I have like harmonies and all sorts of things. And then we have a fourth person who plays like a real world at Sir and
right.
also rules at the guitar. And it's been fun to like, kind of be in their lives and give them new, fresh experiences, like getting them like fly across the world,
right?
Playing shows together.
That's awesome.
As friends, and
yeah.
them get to experience those things for the first time. Whereas like with Delta Spirit, it's kind of old hat.
Right. You guys know what to do. How do you
and
guys
you kind of feel like an asshole when you're like looking over to your bandmate who you've been doing this forever with and go like, isn't this fun that we're on an airplane? And they're like, yeah, I just want to go to sleep. Shut up. How are my miles?
Right.
Totally. That makes them sound like so like indifferent over all this cool shit that they do.
Right.
But it's true. Like we do. We have had a pretty fucking cool ride. So,
right. A very long.
Like the idea of making it. If I told my eighth grade self that this would be how it's worked out so far, I would be like, fuck yes.
That's awesome.
Fuck yes! You're going to meet Bono.
Wait, you met Bono? How was Bono?
Oh, it's so weird. Bono was awesome. Really? Bono's awesome. Best show I ever saw was Staples Center U2 2001, post 9/11.
Oh, yeah.
That
was a Bono, big time.
Bono is still dope.
Yeah.
I feel bad for them. I'm getting the vaccine. I had the Pfizer one, so it has the new U2 record, and it's really good.
Yeah. It was you were forced to get.
It's a good joke. But, like, the whole thing with that was cool. Our meeting, we went to the United Center house that Jordan built in Chicago.
Right.
We got to do this meet and greet. Got to meet The Edge and Larry and Adam too, and amazing, very sweet dudes. We have a dear friend that was part of the camp going back to the Joshua Tree, so we're able to kind of like, that's how the context. They have no fucking idea who U2 is, but
yeah.
Met Bono. Instructed not to talk to Bono.
Oh.
Because his voice was sore and he had a concert to perform. This was before the show. And then he came around and was like, "Hey man, you know, what's up, dude?" And he's like, right. You know, like supping us pretty hard and being very sweet and shy about his voice. And he's like, "Yeah, man, History Makers is so cool. You're in a band." It's like chirping us. No fucking clue of our life experience. It's totally fine. Because his is surreal.
Right.
60 million net every time they're on tour.
Oh my God.
When they're active. Anyway, did we take a picture with Bono? No.
No.
Because we were too distracted when we walked into the room where we were instructed not to talk to Bono, it's because Bono was talking to Steven Spielberg.
Oh,
so I met Steven Spielberg. If I was eighth grade and you told me I was going to meet the director of fucking like, Indiana Jones and Star Wars.
You wouldn't believe it.
Get out of here, bro. Yeah. So that happened. But Bono is really cool. There's one more Bono story was that John, the bass player of Delta Spirit, probably the biggest U2 fan. We're all, well, not all of us, but we love U2.
Yeah.
We at John's son, Henry's christening.
Mm-hmm.
And Bono and The Edge happened to be at the christening because they were at church, at this Anglican church. And so Bono, takes sacrament and is walking past John with the baby who's like in a gown. And John's like, "Oh my God, it's Bono." He's the biggest U2 fan, favorite band ever, favorite singer. And John just goes, "Bono, will you bless my baby?" And he just like reaches out. He's like, "Will you bless my baby?" And Bono, not missing a step, like turns Bono, and it's like, "Of course." And he takes the baby and he's like cuddling the baby. And like, we're all like not sitting next to John, but are like zooming in as much as we can on our phones to like take a picture. And there's like a couple blurry photos where he still has these sky blue glasses, you know? And he's, you know, he's just taken sacrament. He's holding this baby and he's rubbing its face and kissing it on the forehead and saying, "It's a tough world out there, but he's got to be a history maker." And it's the best.
Dude, it's that's best. Amazing.
Yeah. Fuck yeah. Bono's chill.
Blessed.
Give him a break.
A true blessed baby.
Record you can't delete. Just forgive him.
Just forgive him. In.
They're so good. They're so earnest.
Let's just forget that they did that twice to us. Don't forget they had the iPod, the black and red iPod with their album on it. And then they did again. It's what they do.
I want the black and red. Or I almost got the, I just got a new phone because I accidentally threw mine in the trash.
How? How does that happen?
I don't know, dude.
Okay.
we had a tough week in Texas last week.
Right. I heard about that.
So I just got this new phone and I really wanted the red. I really, really love red.
Yeah.
Certain red things. But then I ended up getting the gold one. I have the Pro Max.
Ooh.
So I went from having like an ancient artifact to like this lovely piece of design. It's like the best looking iPhone, but with all the cool shit on it.
No, it looks, the video quality looks great.
It's great.
Yeah, that's really awesome. Cool. It's nice. It's nice to treat yourself to a nice phone that works. I had like the worst phone until like last year when I was on 2019 when I was on tour. I was like, I'm just gonna buy a phone, man. My phone's like overheating in my pants. Like, this is not good.
Yeah, it is. What's that setting?
You have to pay extra for that.
I don't want to say. Hey Siri, heat my pants.
Yeah, seriously. So I bought a new phone. It was nice. I was like, holy shit, like phones have really upgraded in the last five or six years because I just don't throw shit away like ever.
Yeah, you shouldn't. You know, the reality is my iPhone 7 was like totally big and great.
Yeah.
And you know, other than this thing being just like fucking gorgeous,
right,
and the camera being way cooler, it's like functionally it's pretty much the same shit.
Right.
Totally. To be honest. But the battery's lasting a lot longer.
That's why I like it. My battery is dying all the time.
Oh, it's the best.
Yeah. Hey, have you ever, speaking of U2, one more thing on U2. Did you ever watch that movie, that U2 movie, where the guy was going to play the second guitar next to Edge, but then his brother was jealous and told him not to join that band? And then he, not knowing that they were going to be famous or anything, he just thought they were like, you know, pretentious or whatever. He's like, Bono, Edge, what kind of name is that? Dude, we'll start our own band and we'll get famous. Little do you know, he ruined his brother's chances of being in U2 based on a true story.
Dude, that's terrible.
Yeah.
Also, great. I'm glad that didn't happen.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, that's a crazy movie.
I mean, what would the world do with all of that dotted 8-note delay filling everything up?
I know, just a couple chords behind us.
Man, U2 is so good. Have you listened to the deluxe? That's the 20. I was thinking about this because I was like, man, it's been fucking 20 years since the best show I've ever seen. And and the Elevation, which is the Elevation tour, and the Elevation 20-year ultra deluxe vinyl came out.
Ooh,
and I kind of want it. Because it has a bunch of shit on there that was like a Kmart or like Target. It was Target. They did like a partnership with Target and had a couple really insane live recordings from that.
Right.
And then they have like the whole live, instead of just that, they have the whole live show in Boston.
Ooh.
And it's, that show is so good. The United Center, we saw, the show that we saw in Chicago was definitely sub- that experience from like, it was not, I mean, but it was also like, yo, you set like this huge bar and then I have all this lifetime of experience. So I know when I feel like you could pick up that they were having like the most insane show. And they're also doing like a big red campaign thing that night, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know.
But,
you had to have been there.
I heard that, Will from Delta Spirit actually went to the New York one on that same tour.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh yeah. And then like Chris Martin and Jay-Z and Beyonce got on stage at Madison Square Garden. It was totally different. Super insane. So
that's crazy.
That's the other thing is like, yo, you play LA and New York.
Everyone
and
shows
it's like,
up.
Those are the best shows. Yeah. They're so stressful. When you play New York, it's like, you feel like you're flying and all the people in New York just want you to like succeed. So that's great. It's a great audience because they're like, you can do it. You can be the best band and have all your dreams come true. And we'll see it because we're in New York. And we're the most important. And you go, yes, you are. I love you so much. Love me back. Ah! And you like freak out and play a show. I'm so extroverted and I get people drunk.
Yeah.
And so New York is like such a crazy combo where it's just like, oh man, I will stage dive on like an old woman.
Right.
At the Bowery Ballroom. I don't care because I'm getting so pumped.
We were opening for this band in New York and I got a text right before the show. Hey, don't want you to freak out, but every agent from their, you know, from the APA is here. I'm like, oh, okay. Cause I need an agent. And they're like, I know, that's why I'm telling you. No, don't tell me that. Cool. No pressure.
Yeah.
By the way, everyone's here. The boss is here. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was.
That happened to us with like, they had mercy on us and didn't tell us after the fact, which was really thoughtful, but it was like, hey, did you know Robert Plant just watched you play? And you're like, what? In a tiny club in London, Really? But you couldn't see past three people. There wasn't a stage. We just played a corner of a room. Whoa. Robert Plant was there. And he's very tall. And it was like one of those experiences in Wayne's World. More Alice Cooper than Aerosmith. Where it was just very much like, oh yeah, you shaped everything I understand about rock and roll. And
totally.
I love you. I'm not worthy. And, and he's like, thanks, man. But oh, he's like so much taller than
so
you.
So you did get so to talk really to him. Like,
yeah, I got to talk to him. And but it's like, he's so tall and beautiful. And he's like this much taller. So it's like at this angle where you say that to me. And then he's like, thank you. He was very cool.
That's
he was
awesome.
Cool. Yeah. But that whole shit. Yeah. But the stress of those.
The
those
stress
things,
of those. Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes you know, like all of those experiences of like the biggest pickups we've ever had were from like the least important shows.
Right.
Like South by Southwest playing like the rooftop of some Mexican restaurant. And it's like, oh yeah, you got a lawyer.
Yeah.
Or like we played like a burnt out Radio Shack called the Pure Volume Lounge where you can go pick up free margaritas. And we played the Pure Volume Lounge. Is that still a website?
That's not a website anymore. It might be, but I don't think so.
Anyway, so played that. And then they, and then it was like, oh yeah, you have a European booking agent now.
Wow.
Because dude's just like, yeah, man, I just want a margarita. And then it was like, you guys are good.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Like, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, time to go to Europe.
Yeah. Europe's fun.
Is it fun? Yeah. I've yet to go to Europe and play shows. Is there a difference in the crowds or is it all the same?
Yeah. Depends.
Yeah. It depends.
There's things that are better.
Yeah.
There are things that are way worse. You know, the difference is like you had Germany and Scandinavia and Holland and Belgium, those places, it's so like the catering is so much healthier and on time and better. And then the show is like making money.
Right.
With like, and then you go do the same show in England where it's the same amount of people and somehow the show lost money.
Mm.
The promoter's like cool about it. Because it's like, of course you did.
Yeah.
Because nobody makes any money in England because it's so hard to make money in England.
Right.
And then, it sucks.
That's crazy.
But also, but the crowds in England are really cool. You know, like playing London's really fun. Playing like Birmingham and Manchester. It's cool to be in Manchester at all because it's just like shit, so much good music.
Were you a Smiths fan?
Yeah, sure.
Right.
Yeah.
That's mainly why I would go.
You would have seen me in a white V-neck yesterday.
Oh, there you go.
It's fine. Yeah, but like we were just talking about Morrissey shows. Yeah. They're so fun.
I know.
Apparently, I've been like not even thinking about it. It's like, fuck, Morrissey's huge in San Antonio, which makes sense. You know, I want to go to Morrissey's show in San Antonio and see what that's like. Because at the Wiltern, I mean, that's just legendary fun.
Right, totally. I saw him in Ventura and in Santa Barbara, and it was crazy.
Big mouth matador, big mouth strikes again.
Yeah.
I wonder if he's going to come back post pandemic.
They just announced his residency at Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas.
Ooh, that's so fun.
Yeah. I love Vegas. How do you feel about Vegas? People either love Vegas or hate Vegas. Do you like Vegas?
I got married in Vegas with an Elvis impersonator.
Oh, that's amazing.
Mm-hmm. That was fun. We got married at Courthouse and then we did Vegas. Okay, my mom hired an Elvis impersonator. And then my mom and I shared a marijuana experience for the first time. We ate pot brownie. I was like, I always suspect my mom smokes pot. As somebody offered me a pop brownie, I was like, hey, mom, do you want to eat some pop brownie? She's like, yes. And then we both got really high. And then Elvis sang too many songs. And it was weird. And we have
don't be cruel. Yeah.
Don't be cruel. But it was really, really kind of an insane experience.
Right.
But Vegas is cool. I like old Vegas. I like,
Fremont
early,
Street.
Early days, more drinking Matt. Would go out to like the dive bar scene house party thing in Vegas is really, really cool.
That's awesome.
But nowadays it's kind of, I don't know. I would go to Vegas for a show. That sounds fun. I would go see Morrissey.
I would go see Morrissey at the Caesars Palace. Yeah.
Yeah. And sit in the pool. That's
and sit
good.
In the pool. Yeah. The hot tub. That's all my girlfriend talks to me about. Let's find a hot tub. She called me last night. Let's find a hot tub. Let's find an Airbnb. Let's find something like that.
Can I buy a hot tub?
Yeah.
That's what I need. That's what we need here is a hot tub. We have a river. We have a swimming pool.
In the river.
We don't have a hot tub.
The color.
Mm-hmm. I got a Costco card now, man. I need it. Yeah. Oh, yeah. My dad's birthday present is a Costco membership, which is only good for, like, every couple years because it's like, oh, I guess I'll buy some tires.
Yeah,
because I don't
renew
need
it.
Like, I don't need like 8 pounds of peanut butter in like one purchase.
Man,
and I already own a TV. And
I got vitamin C from Costco the other day.
Kirkland
vitamin C.
Yeah,
I'm ready. And D, I'm ready.
Yeah, man.
Well, hell yeah, man. Well yeah,
I gotta let you go.
I'll let you go.
Let me go. I have to go to Target.
Do your thing. Okay,
stop
cool,
being
man.
An entertaining kind of host. I'm
cool,
actually
going to
start doing these things too, but
really?
Like on a different platform. I'm not sure. I forget what the platform's called, but it's my friend's. It's my buddy's cousin. Doesn't that sound cool? That sounds like something in New Jersey. Yeah. Yo, my buddy's cousin. So, I'm gonna do like hangs with people.
Cool.
And it's basically a backstage experience. I'm gonna start doing them on Tuesdays, in 2 months.
That's awesome, man. Let me know. I'll follow you on Instagram, and let me know or something.
Yeah, you should follow me on Instagram.
Yeah, I will. Hell yeah, you'll know it's me. Cool. Well, what's the best way for people to support you in this moment?
Give me money.
Okay.
Send me all your money on Venmo. MLV. You can purchase my records. Find them on the internet. It's pretty easy if you look up Matthew Logan Vasquez. There's a New Delt Spirit record. It's really great.
Right.
Listen to that stuff on Spotify and Amazon Music. You can send me a message and try to organize an outdoor, socially distanced yard party.
Cool.
Possible. Might say yes to that if you can get enough friends to put enough money together. I'm down to do stuff. Because I'm vaccinated. And I just want to play music. So,
I love it. Well, hey, man, thanks so much, man. And have fun at Target and doing what you got to do today.
Yeah, dude.